CIUT 89.5 Toronto.
And we're back. It is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. Shortly, we'll be speaking to Tiefen Dixon, but Phil Conlon has an announcement.
Right. Annexation in the air. This is the subject by Professor Michael Link, and that'll be on the 31st of January at 12:30 p.m. at McMaster University, room to be announced. And again, the same day, 7 p.m. at Barton Stone, Mount Hope United Church, 21 Stone Church Road West at Upper James in Hamilton. Annexation in the air.
Thank you very much. Okay. I believe we have Tiefen Dixon on the line. Are you there?
Yes. Hi, Phil.
How do you do? Thank you very much for joining us.
My pleasure.
I'm looking at the news of the case of President, maybe I'm presuming something, President Gbagbo of Ivory Coast. And the headlines I see, one says he has been acquitted. The second headline is, but he remains in custody. So this is a people who followed the story. This must be rather frustrating and hard to understand. He's been in prison for 7 years, has he not? And what has transpired here? It seems needs explaining.
You're right. This is a frustrating situation. Some would even refer to it as heartbreaking. But I would think for those of us with some longer institutional memory of the ad hoc courts, in particular, International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda, or even the ICTY for former Yugoslavia, we've seen precedents. We've seen proceedings being stopped with prejudice to the prosecutor, as in the case of Barayaguiza at the ICTR, where his immediate release had been ordered when, in fact, came the cavalry to ensure that he never set foot outside that jail. And so thus, in the case of President Gbagbo, we're confronted to a similar situation. The court orders his immediate release, and yet here we are. He's at the jail with his co-accused, Charles Bligoudé. Now, what happened, and this is a fascinating bit of procedure, he was acquitted following a no-case-to-meet motion, meaning the prosecution did their case, and they've got nothing. The defense contends, and the trial chamber by a majority agreed, that even if they didn't question the credibility or the reliability of any of the witnesses, so taking at face value everything the prosecutor has presented, not even then would there be enough to acquit on any of the charges. The judges said that the prosecution's case was, I quote, exceptionally weak. So this is staggering. This is not, it's not even a case where the defense managed to raise a reasonable doubt. This is a prosecution with no case, with only inferences, with testimony that prosecution testimony that's in favor of President Gbagbo. Mm-hmm. Testimony of people who turned out, the defense figured out, that these people were dead. So who that person was at The Hague, we don't know. But who it was supposed to be, allegedly, was no longer alive. Now, this majority of judges, after proceedings that have lasted so long, even President Gbagbo couldn't be indicted in a timely manner. He was only indicted in 2014 in The Hague, because the prosecutor had to get it together, so to speak, to obtain enough evidence upon which the tribunal could even confirm an indictment.
Can I ask you, by the way, on that, because that's just so striking. Was he apprehended? He was the president of a country. There was a political dispute over who had been elected president. Somehow, he fell into the, it was delivered into the hands of the United Nations, but they didn't have an indictment, and they held him. How did has that been reviewed, by the way, by all these lawyers who talk about this? I mean, he could be in custody that long and no indictment?
That's how it works at the ICC. I mean, there is much illegality in the way that President Gbagbo ended up in The Hague in the first place. He was imprisoned by the now leadership of the current president, Alassane Ouattara. You pointed out that there was an electoral dispute. According to the Constitutional Court of Ivory Coast, the winner of that election was Laurent Gbagbo. And therefore, he continued to exercise his duties as head of state in circumstances in which there was a tremendous amount of political violence. As commander-in-chief of the military, he has a supervisory duty, you know, to ensure safety. And so it is a pretty basic question before the court as to who won the election. Mm-hmm. And the prosecutor's position has always been, no, we're not doing that. That would be political. But if he was the legitimate president of Ivory Coast, carrying out legitimate security action, when we have armed rebels in the country still, because France and the UN insisted that he hold these elections despite the fact that there was still an armed rebellion, that appears to be a legitimate question as to who won. That being said, so he is arrested in his residence in April by Ouattara's men, but also by French UN troops, kept in custody in horrible conditions in the north for several months. And in the meantime, it appears that there's a little diplomatic game being played with a former employee of the ICC prosecutor's office who's gone back to French diplomacy, who's on the horn with Ouattara, advising him of what he should do with Gbagbo to get Gbagbo to the ICC. Now, there's a little jurisdictional wrinkle because at that time, Ivory Coast had signed on to the Rome Statute, which would give the ICC jurisdiction over its citizens, but it had not ratified it.
Mm-hmm.
So from the best...
That's actually the same position in the United States, right?
Yes, except the United States went ahead and unsigned it, which is a wonderful precedent in international law, the ability to unsign treaties. That had not been done previously, and the Russian Federation has now availed itself of the same privilege.
Well, I forgot to mention that they are an exceptional country, as they say. Therefore,
that's right.
They have kings, as the kids in the playground say.
Yeah. And what Taka was, as far as I know, advised by this French diplomat at the French delegation in New York at the UN, is to request that the ICC have jurisdiction over a limited period of time. So non-member state countries can ask for the ICC prosecutor to avail herself of jurisdiction for a certain period, which he did. So during the electoral period from October 2010 to, let's say, the time that he has put Gbagbo in custody, which would be April 2011. But in the meantime, there's still a constitution of Ivory Coast, and that constitution gives sole jurisdiction to decide on an extradition to the Court of Appeals in Abidjan. Mm-hmm. And that was not respected whatsoever. And so there is a warrant of arrest, but no indictment for some 2.5-3 years. Mm-hmm. The prosecutor's case begins in 2016. 82 witnesses, thousands of pages of written testimony, and it turns out that this was a net of speculation, inferences, mm-hmm. assumptions. I don't know, it reminded me of those early ICTR proceedings, mm-hmm. with this very heavy dank atmosphere of presumption of guilt. This colonial white attitude of surely an African head of state has committed crimes against humanity and seeks to hold on to power. I've heard these very words before, before the court in Arusha and indeed in The Hague for former Yugoslavia, fighting at all costs to hang on to power, which is an interesting thesis for the prosecutor to have when they reject any inquiry into the election result. Mm-hmm. So he's clinging to power unlawfully, but at the same time, we're not going to look into.
You know, as we were discussing it, it's so striking that you actually had an open political contest. Everybody agrees, apparently, that it was a close contest between himself and his political opponent. Is it pronounced Ouattara? Anyway,
Ouattara.
And outside parties, in the name of the, well, in this case, United Nations, gets all excited about apparently a very democratic process. Nobody was prevented from running, and you had an actual vote. You had a dispute about the outcome, but we're talking about imprisoning people for being daring to seek office or denying them the right to publish journals, etc. And yet they landed on Gbagbo and Ivory Coast with both feet. And it was France and the United Nations and other parties who just disrupted matters, right?
Absolutely. First of all, it was not necessary to have those elections, and Gbagbo's lawyers at the time had already approached France for assistance in disarming these rebel groups in order to do things properly, to have a proper census, for example, to have people have a realistic sense that they can go to the polls and actually freely vote. France didn't cooperate. Ex-French President Sarkozy was a close personal friend of Ouattara and also somebody who despised President Gbagbo. President Gbagbo is a longtime Democrat, spent time in jail, was a socialist, had been a member of the Second International and studied in France, but wasn't going to take any paternalism from any French leader. It happened first with Chirac and then with Sarkozy, where Gbagbo sharply rebuked the French leaders for talking down to him, for saying, now you must do this, which is an attitude French presidents clearly continue to have with respect to leaders they believe are lesser or from their private continent, Africa. So that Gbagbo was not liked by France, and indeed it would appear that the UN, and anyway the UN contingent in Ivory Coast was mostly French, that the UN enabled these French designs to remove him from power. And it should have been an open and shut case because, of course, African leaders commit crimes against humanity, but it's not, because they don't have any evidence. And the difference now is, I think, and it's, you know, confusing my position on the ICC, but these judges, this trial chamber, the majority, 2 out of 3, they did the right thing. Mm-hmm. They're being, of course, criticized and, oh, this is the last thing the ICC needs, another acquittal. you know.
Yes. I'm sorry, I have to laugh that, you know, acquittals are just definitely not what we were asking for. That wasn't on the menu when they set this up.
Right, and there are too many, and this is, you know, challenging the ICC's legitimacy that there would be an acquittal. Mm-hmm. Now, seems to me that the opposite should be true. You know, imagine a dystopia wherein criminal courts could never acquit. That mm-hmm. wouldn't be too legitimate, but for the white academic and journalistic defenders of the ICC, this is a machine that is designed to achieve the goal of finding everyone guilty, because the prosecutor is so perfect and she never makes mistakes. The people that she brings in are all guilty.
Mm-hmm.
So let's enjoy this show trial. And these judges decided not to play along. And I've followed the procedural history and read some of the transcripts. I can see that they've been impatient and frustrated for a very long time. They're being asked by the prosecutor to stretch their imagination beyond normal bounds. Let me give you an example of what the prosecutor presents as being intent to commit crimes against humanity. The fact that he criticized France and the UN, the fact that state radio mentioned that the late Muammar Gaddafi, had financed one of the election campaigns of Nicolas Sarkozy.
Mm-hmm. That showed criminal intent on the part of the individual who said that.
Yes, and I mean, and Gbagbo is not the state radio. So imagine the kind of stretch the prosecutor is asking you to do if indeed you have that kind of flexibility and have been practicing yoga for many, many years. But I don't think these judges have that flexibility. This is asking far too much. This has nothing to do with criminal intent. Another example is you must infer criminal intent on the basis of Gbagbo demonizing Ouattara. And this demonization would consist of the following. Gbagbo said in one of those speeches that Ouattara had been involved in every coup attempt in Ivory Coast since 1999. Now, his lawyers go on to say, be that as it may, this is simply a statement of fact.
Yes.
That's actually uncontroversial.
Mm-hmm.
So judges are asked on this slim basis to conclude to criminal intent, and without it seems from what I've read, it's very slender in terms of actual evidence of actual commission of an actual offense.
Mm-hmm.
This is all journalistic garbage, and so you have to be one can be reassured to some extent that there are a couple members of this tribunal in The Hague who don't want to be complicit in this, you know, for their legacy, for the history books.
Yeah.
However, there are still 3 out of 5 at the Court of Appeals who saw fit to suspend the trial court's order for immediate release. I mean, how do we even get there? A person is acquitted. They should be free to go. They are acquitted.
Mm-hmm.
And the prosecutor has the right under the Rome Statute, in exceptional circumstances, to petition for the release to be suspended. And those the criteria for that is the severity of the offense, concrete flight risk, and great chances on appeal. And as far as the chances on appeal went, this trial court who had entertained this motion said, guys, we just threw you out after the prosecution case.
Mm-hmm.
Because the evidence is exceptionally weak. There's no way you have a great chance of appeal. The prosecutor had only asked, in any event, for Gbagbo and Blaise Goudé to be released under conditions. And it would seem that the appellate court was seized by the prosecutor to appeal this trial court decision to order immediate release, and suspended the release within 12 minutes, according to Gbagbo's defense counsel.
So,
they've seen the time stamps and everything.
These are not judges with a great deal of respect for each other, from the sound of it.
That's for sure.
It's really an ugly. We should really remind our listeners, you know, for many, and certainly in Africa and the states of Africa, the International Criminal Court itself is on trial because the case has been made by Burundi and others have spoken up about it. This is a court that seems to have a fixation about Africans.
Of course. But yes, it's absolutely accurate. It's so much that they used to have on their FAQs on their website. Is it true that the ICC has only prosecuted Africans? And in their answer, yes, but.
Yeah. Yes, but. Go on.
But we're fighting for the rights of African victims. See? Turn that frown upside down. This is a pro-African court because we are pro-African victims. Mm-hmm. Now, the people writing this don't have the first idea of what criminal law is, what a criminal trial looks like, what presumption of innocence is. Mm-hmm. They have no right to be talking about speculative victims and saying that this is about them. Go ahead, get your lynch mob together, firing squad, shoot them. But don't call it a trial. Mm-hmm. Don't call yourselves a court or a tribunal or name yourselves prosecutor and judges if they don't have the first concept of how a criminal trial is supposed to work with proof beyond a reasonable doubt. Yeah. So it's very unfortunate in this instance that the Court of Appeal has suspended the release and has done so until at least the next hearing that's scheduled for February 1st, when you'll recall the prosecutor was not objecting to the release per se. They wanted release with conditions. And now they're not released and there are no conditions. This is the Court of Appeal giving the prosecutor more than what they even asked for.
You know, by the way, we're speaking to T. Van Dixon, by the way, an authority on international law and has practiced it. I was reading today in one of the African papers that the prosecutor, Ms. Basuda, said that she wanted that if he's going to be released, that he not be allowed to discuss the case, that he could not make any public statements if they was going to put him at liberty. How about that?
Oh, he can't say he's
innocent. He can't mention that he was acquitted.
It just shows the shameful incompetence and the raw nerve of these prosecutors. They still think they're back in the 90s. They have been acquitted, found not guilty. Mm-hmm. There's no reason to continue their detention, and there's certainly no reason to restrict their freedom of expression. Unconscionable.
Mm-hmm. I guess I have to ask you about the financing. I also read in the paper today that the United Kingdom is the main source of funds for the court, because apparently these judges are making somewhere around $200,000 a year, and they want more. And because of the ugliness of these cases, and we have the one involving the Prime Minister and President of Kenya, we have Mr. Bemba, all of these cases have turned out to be disasters for the prosecutor, but they do want more money. And there is a problem about who pays the piper here and how long can this court go on in the way it's conducting itself.
Yeah. Well, in the field of economics, there's a concept known as sunken cost. You continue investing in a project that has yielded no results. So I think the assembly of state parties are beginning to think along those lines. Now, you know, what is the yield on the investment here? Well, they believe it's convictions. Mm-hmm. And it's odd to think about the United Kingdom, ostensibly the home of habeas corpus, and the presumption of innocence, and the Anglo tradition of criminal defense bar. But this is different because it's black people. Mm-hmm. This is different because they forever assume that it will be Africa or some lesser Asian country, preferably one they colonized. Mm-hmm. But that being said, you mentioned judges asking for more money. And so this concerns 10 out of 40 of them. Indeed, their salary is $200,000. There's a pension scheme, but it's also not taxable, which is better
boy.
Than, I think.
Yummy.
Yeah.
I smell gravy.
Right, in many other countries. And this this lawsuit is being led by, president of the court now, Eboy Osuji. It's a kind of interesting... I don't know. Haven't thought it fully through. But
he and I once worked at the same law firm.
Oh, really?
Just a funny footnote. Ripley's Believe It or Not.
Well, you mustn't have been paying him enough.
Yeah, we seem to have parted ways. I haven't got any Christmas cards. This is Stephen Dixon. We have just 2 minutes left. Do you have a strong conviction? Would you join Burundi in, or advise other African countries or countries anywhere to make up their minds about this court or what to do about it?
I'll answer you after February 1st. If the Court of Appeals is able to release these guys, then, I'd soft pedal this. But otherwise, and before this acquittal, this was something I was telling my students, there are very attractive regional alternatives to the ICC. There's a statute for a regional, transnational criminal court called the Malabo Protocol. It's a great statute. It includes these basic offenses of aggression, crimes against humanity, genocide, and war crimes, but also things that matter to folks on the continent, unconstitutional change of government, and fantastic environmental offenses. So this Malabo Protocol is actually a model for the world. So if President Gbagbo and Minister Bligude stay detained until the appeal, which can be another 2 years, then definitely my advice to Burundi that's already on board, Burundi, Kenya, South Africa, would definitely be to tell their friends about how good it feels leave the ICC.
Stephen Dixon, it's a pleasure talking to you, and we are going to call you after February for sure to get your final judgment on this court.
Delighted, Phil.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
This is Tater Report. We got to thank Febby because she got us through this, and we will, I believe, and I'll thank Phil Condon, and we'll see you next week.